Good evening. I'd like to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today is April 25th, 2023. Let the record reflect that it is 6:32 p.m. Today we have present Representative Groh, Representative McCabe, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Carpenter. In the room with us, we have Senator Meyer. Thank you, sir, for joining us. We remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Staff assisting us today will be Kevin Allen with the House Records, Zach Lawhorn with LIO, and my staff, Kendra Broussard, is a committee aide. And I don't think you're Kevin Allen. No. Give me your name again. Say again.
Suniva Sinclair.
Okay, so Suniva Sinclair will be helping us with the House Records. Thank you. Okay, today on the agenda, we'll hold public testimony on House Bill 109, first off, and then we'll be introducing a CS for HB 110. So we'll first bring up House Bill 109, and I would like to open public testimony and get started. So there will be a two-minute time limit for public testimony, and I see that there are a number of folks online. Do we have anybody in the room that wishes to testify? Seeing none, let's go to the phone lines here. And first up, we have Alan Straw. Looks like you're calling from Eagle River.
Yeah.
Sir, if you could put yourself on the record by giving us your name and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Alan Straw. I was born in Alaska and have lived here 65 plus years now, and I'd like to start by saying I find this bill alarmingly offensive to every citizen of Alaska. To consider corporate tax cuts while leveraging that loss of revenue on the backs of Alaskans is irresponsible and abhorrent. Until all oil company subsidies are eliminated, there should never be talk of taxing the citizens of the state. Here's a newsflash for you. The oil companies will keep exploring and drilling as long as it's profitable. And the billions and billions of dollars we have handed over to them over decades have been nothing but pure profit to the shareholders. They will pump until it's gone and no longer profitable and leave the mess in their wake for the state to clean up, because that's what corporations do. They are beholden only to shareholders, and if it's not profitable, they will shirk the responsibility whenever and wherever possible. They have no responsibility to Alaska, none at all. They have turned windfall profits the past couple of years, and you want to give them more? To suggest cutting corporate taxes while taxing Alaskans, one would have to be either vacuous, naive, blind, or deeply in the pockets of the oil companies. And to suggest a sales tax, a regressive tax on the citizens of the state. What about the thousands of slope workers that come up here and reap a living out of the state and fly home every couple of weeks? They take all they can and return nothing. They spend nothing here. They support nothing here. They take everything and leave. A progressive income tax would seem reasonable option to include everyone who makes a living here to pay their share. A sales tax? No. Urbanite Alaska posted this online today. Our schools are collapsing. SNAP is failing. Infrastructure is falling apart. Subsistence fisheries have collapsed. We have no housing, and people are sprinting away from our state as soon as they can. Let's make groceries more expensive. What are you thinking? Sales tax, no. Hell no. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Straw, for your testimony today. And I would also like to thank you for your patience in holding online. Next up, we'll go to David Leslie calling from Fairbanks. Sir, if you could put yourself on the record by giving us your name and begin your two-minute testimony.
Yes, my name is David Leslie, and I'm in Fairbanks, and I can't begin to explain to you how offensive this idea is to tax the poorest people in the state while giving cuts to corporations. Namely, we all know it's mostly going to be oil and mining companies, to give them tax cuts while demanding the poorest of the poor pay extra on taxes is unfathomable. It has huge implications for the Alaska Native community, especially those off of the road system in the bush. So I would go as far to say that this is racist. And we all know women have a harder time getting paid as much as men, so this is sexist. And LGBT people have a harder time keeping jobs finding secure housing, and on top of that, you want them to pay more for the basic necessities. I'm also afraid, I do not speak for the state, but I am a state employee at the Fairbanks Pioneer Home, and I can't afford a one bedroom. I can't afford basic maintenance on my old car, and now you want people like me to pay more while also decreasing the amount of revenue the state will get. Just the millions of dollars we will be giving to oil and mining on top of what we already do is such a terrible idea, and this has implications for the most marginalized people in Alaska, and I suggest that you do not move this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie, for your comments today and your testimony, and also your patience as we get the meeting started a little late. I would like to let the record reflect that Representative Ortiz and Sumner joined us at 6:34 today, and Representative Stapp was here and stepped out and will likely be back. Next up, we'll go to Philip Mosier, calling from Juneau. Sir, if you can put yourself on the record by giving us your name and begin your two-minute testimony.
Hello, my name is Philip Mosier. I'm calling in from Juneau representing myself. I wasn't planning on testifying today, but honestly, this bill is just comically evil. It's comically bad. I can't imagine a bill where a homeless person or a person struggling to afford rent, a person where a rent is third or more over the income, or a person that doesn't have a house at all, where every dollar that they have goes into buying what they need to eat and survive, gets taxed for every single cent, while the richest people in the state have a paltry amount, and even less so because they're in charge of the corporations. It's just absurd. I cannot believe that we're even talking about this after the information about the Willow Project came out, in which for the first 10 years of its lifespan, the state is going to be in a further deficit because of just how much tax credits will go into that development. I just really can't understand this bill at all. This has to be a joke. I do not support this bill at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mosier. Next up, we'll go to Mr. Peter Van Flein, calling from Fairbanks. Sir, if you can put yourself on the record by giving us your name and begin your two-minute testimony.
Hi, it's Peter Van Flein, Fairbanks, Alaska, representing myself. And in looking at HB 109, a sales tax is the most regressive and expensive form of tax, especially to Alaskans. It's punitive to rural Alaskans. It will need a large new state department to administer and enforce the sales tax rules. Be very expensive. It will also be expensive for businesses to implement and service. Private sector doesn't need another thing thrown on them. Corporations are already not paying much, if any, in income taxes, yet they are the most intensive users of our infrastructure. Cutting taxes to corporations further makes absolutely no sense. The greatest gain to our state budget would be to repeal the worst return on investment, thank you, Sean Parnell, that is SB 21. The amount of money we have thrown down the drain at the oil industry that they didn't ask for, but they sure enjoy having it, continues to harm Alaska today. Repealing SB 21 would be the first biggest step you could take to fixing our budget problems. Come on, people. Let's open our eyes. Let's be moral. Let's be ethical. And let's be smart. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Flein, for your testimony today. I see no one else waiting online to testify. Is there anybody else that showed up in the room and wants to testify? I don't see any. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record, and we have not had anybody else join us online or in the room to provide public testimony. So as of 6:49 p.m., I will close public testimony. And I will set House Bill 109 aside until a later date. Next item on the agenda is committee substitute for House Bill 110. I will now bring forward House Bill 110 and would like to offer the committee substitute, Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 110, work draft 33-LS0371/R as our working document. And I will object for the purposes of this.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. I will have my staff come forward and give us an explanation of the changes in the CS. And you all should have the summary of changes provided as well.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, my name is Kendra Broussard, staff to Representative Carpenter. I will read the explanation of changes for committee substitute for House Bill 110. So the changes, so it's a new title, has the following words removed: transferring the dividend program from the Department of Revenue to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The CS deletes section 2 through 23, 26 through 28, 35 through 45 from HB 110. Section 24 from HB 110. Section 3 is section 25 from HB 110. Section 4 is section 29 from HB 110. Section 5 is section 30 from HB 110. Section 6 is section 31 from HB 110. Section 7 is section 32 from HB 110. Section 8 is section 33 from HB 110. Section 9 is section 34 from HB 110. Section 10 adds new sections to Alaska Statute 37.13 to establish the dividend fund as a separate fund in the Permanent Fund Corporation. The dividend fund shall be administered and invested by the Permanent Fund Board and will retain any unexpended balances. Section 10 also creates a restorative justice account in the dividend fund. The executive director shall transfer from the dividend fund to this account the amount of dividend individuals who have been convicted of a felony would otherwise receive. Section 10 also states the legislature may appropriate amounts from the restorative justice account to the crime victim compensation fund, the Office of Victims' Rights, and grants to nonprofit organizations, departments of corrections, according to percentage laid out in this section. Section 10 also adds a new section for the payment of dividends. Each year, the corporation shall pay a permanent fund dividend to each eligible individual. The amount of the dividend is determined by the Commissioner of Revenue and shall be paid by December 31st of each year. The board shall transfer every year to the Department of Revenue amounts that are taken out of the dividend by law, including the dividend raffle. Section 10 also creates a new section under the corporation that requires information received by the corporation related to the permanent fund dividend to be confidential. Section 11 adds definitions. Section 12 adds conforming language to direct dividend payments to the estate of an eligible person. Section 13 is conforming language to direct dividend payments to claimants of levies, garnishments, or other remedies of debt. Section 14 is conforming language to direct dividend payment to the estate of an eligible person. Section 15 is conforming language resulting from moving the dividend fund from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. Section 16 is conforming language resulting from moving the dividend fund from the department to the corporation. Section 17 adds a new section requiring the Department of Revenue to provide the corporation all information necessary for the corporation to distribute funds from the dividend fund. Section 18 allows the Department of Revenue to disclose confidential information to the Permanent Fund Corporation for executing the payment of the dividend. Section 19 is conforming language resulting from moving the dividend fund from the department to the corporation. Sections 20 through 22 adds definitions. Section 23 is conforming language resulting from moving the dividend fund from the department to the corporation. Section 24 repeals requirements of the Department of Revenue to no longer pertinent. Section 25 transitions sections similar to Section 46 from HB 110. Section 26 is Section 47 from HB 110 that provides a July 1st, 2024 effective date. And that is all.
Thank you, Ms. Broussard. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Gray.
Thank you. I'd like to start with Section 10, with the creation of the restorative justice account. That's new, right? That was in there already?
The restorative, Representative Gray, the restorative justice account already existed. It's just creating it in the fund that is now created within the corporation.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's why it's here, is because it's moving with everything else. And probably the answer is the same thing there. I just don't know about it. What's the raffle? It said that the including the dividend raffle. I didn't know what the dividend raffle was.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I believe that is also already in statute.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know about a lot of the dividend raffle. I'll Google it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sorry. Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions with this. The first question is, can you, Mr. Chair, explain the logic of the CS and the number of and the explanation for the number of sections that you've deleted?
Yes, Representative Groh, I can, and I will also ask Ms. Naumann, who's online, to help with the characterization of what has happened with the CS. The intent here was to simplify the bill. We are moving a portion of the permanent fund program to the permanent fund corporation, and some of the functions of the permanent fund program remain with the Department of Revenue. And so what we have done in the CS is move the pertinent parts to the corporation and leave the pertinent parts to the Department of Revenue. And what I would like to do is ask Ms. Naumann, the CS, what portions of the permanent fund program are functionally transferred to the permanent fund corporation?
For the record, this is Emily Naumann, Legislative Legal Services. Chair Carpenter, the prior version of the CS transferred the entire permanent fund dividend program from application from the second someone did, submits an application all the way through the payment of the dividend, including both the calculation of the amount of the dividend and the determination of eligibility. The prior version of the bill transferred that all to out of DOR into the Alaska Permanent Fund, although some of those tasks were initially with the Permanent Fund Corporation. The bill that you are considering, the CS, instead just transfers the responsibility of actually physically issuing the check, paying the check out of the dividend fund from DOR, where it exists now, to the Permanent Fund Corporation. And the bill makes changes associated with that conforming to that new requirement that APFC be the entity that pays the check out of the dividend fund rather than DOR.
Ms. Naumann, under the CS, who would determine or how would it be determined what the dividend check would be for the permanent fund corporation to then pay? Would it be the permanent fund corporation that decides that, or would it be the Department of Revenue that decides that?
Sure. So how the system currently works now under statute is that the amount of the dividend is actually determined by the legislature by appropriation. The legislature determines how much money gets moved into the dividend fund, and then there's a calculation that DOR makes that basically just divides up the amount of the dividend by the number of eligible individuals and with some adjustments for past dividends and back dividends and some dividends they hold in the event that someone in the future claims them. that calculation is currently done by DOR under the the CS that you're considering. That calculation would still be done by DOR, but the actual payment of the check, DOR then would then tell APFC what that amount is and direct APFC to pay the dividend out of the dividend fund.
Thank you, Ms. Naumann. Representative Groh, does that answer your question?
It does. I have additional questions. Mr. Chair, I note that there's a fiscal note that has a regular recurring cost of $8.5 million a year, actually a little more than that. Do you anticipate or expect that there'll be a new fiscal note that would reflect different numbers?
Representative Groh, yes. There will need to be a new fiscal note associated with this because the entire program is not being moved, and therefore the cost would be different. We will provide that fiscal note when we have it.
Mr. Chair, could you explain the logic of that more from your personal view, not so much as a mechanical what's happening, but more your rationale or arguments for doing it this way as opposed to either the current method, the current law, or the original bill?
Yes, I can. And for the record, Representative Allard joined us at 6:59 p.m. Please let the record reflect.
Thank you, Chair. I apologize for being late.
It's all right. I know we got a busy night going on. Representative Groh, to answer your question, the intent of the CS was not only to provide the statute that House Joint Resolution 7 would point to in order to determine how we pay the PFD and how we pay the government's portion of the earnings every year, but it was also to help insulate that program, that dedication of funds from the legislature and what we do on a regular basis by transferring the requirement of the payment to the Permanent Fund Corporation. And it's paid by statute, and the Permanent Fund Corporation just follows the statute and does that, and it's not a function of the state government. So it's kind of insulating the political process, or insulating the payment of the PFD from the political process.
But just to make as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, isn't it true also that Department of Revenue will be somewhat involved in actually, for example, in terms of calculating the amount of the dividend, and I think other functions as well? Could you explain? So it's not like one explanation you first heard when the bill originally came out was, hey, we're going to like take everything away from the Department of Revenue. It's all going to go to Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. This won't distract the Department of Revenue anymore. The payment of permanent fund dividends, Department of Revenue could then focus just on raising and collecting revenue. And then now with this new CS, obviously there still will be substantial responsibilities at the Department of Revenue as well. Could you elaborate a little more on your thinking about that, please?
Yes, Representative Groh. So some of the information that the Department of Revenue would need to use, personal information, that type of thing, is stuff that they would have to, information that they would have to coordinate with other departments. And it functionally became easier to keep that portion of the process of determining who's eligible within the government entity as opposed to moving it to the Permanent Fund Corporation itself. And it just became as we worked through the details, became clear that that would probably be an easier way to manage this.
A further follow-up, do you, Mr. Chairman, are you going to have the or expect to have the Permanent Fund Corporation address the CS in terms of effects on their operations?
Representative Groh, yes. We may have had a miscommunication with the Permanent Fund Corporation, or maybe they thought the meeting was canceled because of the delay getting the meeting started today. So I anticipated that they were going to be here, but they are not with us right now. We have attempted to reach them to see if they could join us, but it may be dinner time.
Got it. I give an additional.
Representative Groh.
Sure. We talked a little bit about this last night, but I'd like to elaborate more on it. We talked about a world in which somehow, you have, as you've described it before, and it's right up there on the screen in front of us, House Bill 110, this legislation, and House Joint Resolution 7, the proposed constitutional amendment, would dovetail each other, or be, you know, put in place in tandem. What happens if, hypothetically, HJR 7 became an amendment to the Constitution, but House Bill 110 did not pass? What is your view of what would occur then?
Representative Groh, the answer to your question would be that the House Joint Resolution 7, as drafted, points to a statute for the how you would decide what the draw is from the permanent fund, and also from what the payment of that fund income source would be for PFDs or for government. That statute currently exists. Actually, those statutes currently exist. And so the constitutional amendment would just point to the current statute. Without HB 110 passing, the current statute would remain the same. If we passed HB 110, then the statute would change, and there would be no difference from a legal perspective. And we can ask Emily, Ms. Naumann, to confirm this, but there's no legal difference from the obligations of the permanent fund. I'm sorry, the Constitution, the constitutional change regarding which bill or which statute is on the books. It just points to a statute that deals with the permanent fund dividend and the payment of the payment of the government's portion.
I would like to address it, Chair.
Ms. Naumann, maybe you could help me out with a more eloquent answer to Representative Groh's question.
Sure. For the record, this is Emily, Legislative Legal Services. Is it possible to distill the question? I heard kind of a an ongoing conversation, and I just want to make sure I answer the right.
Sure thing.
Right. I'll try to be short, crisp, direct, and clear. What would be the effect if House Joint Resolution 7 became part of the Constitution, was put in the Constitution, but House Bill 110, as amended in front of us, did not become the law of the state of Alaska?
Sure. Through the chair to Representative Groh, Representative Carpenter accurately summarized it, which is that the current law would become the current law that describes the transfers of funds from to and from the dividend fund would remain in place, and it would become a transfer rather than an appropriation. So the current statutes that are in the law would cause those transfers to happen, or would cause the dividend to be paid automatically without an annual appropriation, but it would still be paid according to the formulas set out in the current statutes in 3713-145.
Thank you, Ms. Naumann. And I guess as you have stated that, there may be one obvious difference between how things are going right now without HGR 7 and how they might be conducted and if HGR 7 would be passed, because right now we don't actually transfer, we have to appropriate. And so maybe the answer would be, and I would just run this back to you, Ms. Naumann, if your last statement was correct, that the current statute would then become a transfer, I would say again, because there was past history where it was a transfer and only recent history where we have turned it into an appropriation, per the Wilikowski decision, that even if we did not pass HB 110, the current statute would then be treated as a transfer instead of the appropriation that we currently use.
For the record, Emily Naumann, again, Legislative Legal Services. I'm not sure I entirely caught the gist of your question, but the Wilikowski case recently made absolutely certain that the current statutes as they sit today without HJR 7 are subject to appropriation. It's my understanding that historically that movement of money has always happened with an appropriation, consistent with our understanding of the dedicated funds provision. HJR 7 would change that. The bill in front of you would not. This would remain without, you know, some sort of constitutional underpinning to change underpinning it. The system of dividends through appropriations would stay the same, even if HB 110 was adopted.
I guess a real simple question then for the exact verbiage within the statute where it currently says transfer, but the Wilikowski case has caused us to see that as an appropriation required, then that word transfer would likely actually mean transfer now that we have a dedicated fund per HJR 7. Is that accurate?
Okay. That's correct, yes.
Thank you. Representative Groh?
I just want to make it absolutely clear that there's obviously, because we have the two measures in front of us, that HJR 7 is obviously a constitutional amendment, and that's what would be needed, Mr. Chairman, as you've accurately pointed out, to create the transfer without it going through the appropriation process. And HB 110 is, of course, a statute, and it cannot, you know, by itself, of course, change the Constitution. So there's a world in which it's possible, obviously, the HJR 7 becomes is put in place and House Bill 110 doesn't pass. And there's obviously, of course, a world in which House Bill 110 does become a law and HJR 7 does not become part of the Constitution. And those are obviously, they have different effects.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Representative Gray?
Thank you. I think this is exactly what we're talking about right now, and I apologize for repeating anything. But the old HB 110 was really a very big movement of a lot of things over to the Permanent Fund Corporation. I just want to be clear, we're not doing that huge move. So I just want to know exactly how small of a move we're doing, and I assume, because it is smaller, that it will cost less.
Representative Gray, I think the best way to answer your question is to delay the answer until we have the fiscal note, which is going to more accurately describe exactly what it is that you're looking for.
Thank you.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, and it looks like we've been joined by Mr. Mitchell, CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Sir, are you with us tonight?
Yes, this is Devin Mitchell.
Thank you, sir, for joining us. I think we have a question from Representative Groh.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Mitchell, I very much appreciate you joining us tonight, and what we're addressing right now is a proposed committee substitute for House Bill number 110. It's in a work draft. Mr. Mitchell, and you should probably put yourself on the record as CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. But Mr. Mitchell, have you had an opportunity to review this proposed committee substitute?
For the record, Devin Mitchell, CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. And yes, we have had a chance today to take a look at the work draft version R, the CS for House Bill 110. And it's going to take a little bit of work for us to determine the fiscal impact. There's, even though it's a simplification from the prior version, it doesn't entail the full removal of the permanent fund dividend division from the Department of Revenue and replanting under the corporation. It does require the corporation to somehow be able to obtain from the dividend division, which would still receive applications and determine eligibility within its role under the Department of Revenue, the eligible applicant list, which would be information that's sensitive and confidential, and then take that information and use it to distribute the permanent fund dividend distribution of that year. And there's complexities to that in the initial conversation. We were able to have a call with the director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division earlier today, and some of the complexities, because there's payments that go out related to prior year dividend applications, maybe as many as five prior years, depending on how a particular applicant had had been reviewed, or their application had been reviewed through the years. And there's also payments that occur more than just the initial payment, because there's eligibility determinations that are made almost throughout the course of the fiscal year. And that process, as I understand it, is some of the distribution process is outsourced by the Permanent Fund Dividend Division right now. Some of it's insourced. A lot of it relies on their proprietary data system. And so we just would need to figure out how to integrate that work underneath our program, which is obviously quite a bit different. We're not a payment distribution system right now. We're an investment system right now. And so it is just going to take a little bit of thought and time for us to determine that fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Representative Groh has a follow-up.
Mr. Mitchell, thank you very much for that response. So you've discussed how you need to explore more to determine the fiscal impact of this proposed community substitute. Mr. Mitchell, I'd like you to address, to the degree you can this evening, what you see as the likely operational impact of if this proposed community substitute became the law. That is, what do you think would happen to the operations of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation in its mission to invest the permanent fund if you were also in charge of distributing permanent fund dividends?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, I don't think it would impact the existing operation. It would be more a impact on a new operation that would be required. So, I mean, it would be the process of determining a new function, and so we wouldn't want to distract from the current work and the high priority that we have on maximizing return through the investment of the permanent fund. But certainly we'd need to have resources to be able to implement the version of the CS for HB 110 is currently envisioned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Please let the record reflect that we were joined by Representative Colom at 7:15. Thank you, ma'am, for being here. Any other questions about the CS? Representative Gray.
Thank you. I believe this question will be directed to Ms. Nauman. So am I understanding it correctly that without a constitutional amendment, the legislature could still appropriate money that we sent? I just feel like even if we're saying that this money is going to the permanent fund and this money is part of the permanent fund and we're transferring it over there and it's going to go directly to a dividend, that without the constitutional amendment, it wouldn't really be protected. And then I feel like I'm going to ask the second part of the question. With a constitutional amendment saying what the dividend has to be by statute, then it wouldn't matter where that money is. The Constitution says that it has to be used for a dividend and the legislature can't touch it. So I guess my question is, with a constitutional amendment, we could leave all the money with the Department of Revenue and issue our dividends the way they are now, and they are protected by the Constitution. Without the constitutional amendment, wherever we put the money, it would not be protected from the legislature. Is that a correct understanding?
Again, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair, Representative Gray. There were a lot of points that you made there, so I just want to make sure I hit all of them. So without a constitutional amendment, you are correct that no matter where the dividend appropriation statute structure is found in the statutes, that amount ultimately will still be subject to appropriation every year by the legislature. HB 110 does move the dividend fund out of DOR and into the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and moves the administrative task of paying out dividends to the corporation. And that would happen regardless of whether or not a constitutional amendment was adopted. But unless if a constitutional amendment like HJR 7 passed, the transfer of money for dividends would happen subject to the statute. So it would appear not to require an appropriation, but it would still be at least somewhat under the control of the legislature, who could change the statute that could ultimately change the amount or the way that the dividend is calculated.
Follow up,
Representative Gray.
So what I heard right there is that we really would need HB 110 to protect that money to make it absolutely only for dividends. That if we had the constitutional amendment but left all the money at DOR, didn't transfer it to the permanent fund corporation, that we could by statute still touch that money?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, no, and I'm sorry if I give you a misimpression. The statutes as they currently read today still use the word transfer. Okay. So as the statutes read today in the statute books, you would not need HB 110 to effectuate a sort of automatic dividend.
Thank you. So just to make sure I'm clear, if we have the constitutional amendment stating that we must follow the dividend formula, that this money must be dedicated for the dividend, then it does not matter where that money is. It must be used for the dividend. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, yes, that's correct. At that point, it wouldn't matter whether or not a dividend fund is housed in DOR or the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. It would be used for that purpose in accordance with the Constitution.
Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Carpenter. So I'm not sure who to ask this, you or Ms. Nauman, but HGR 7 just says you must pay a dividend. It doesn't have any amount in there. It just says pay a dividend. The formula comes from the statute that we're talking about. So if the legislature, no matter how, if we pass HGR 7 and protect a dividend, the money can still be drained down to a dollar for every Alaskan, and the legislature could use it, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, we did not put a formula or any money or any monetary value or anything like that in the Constitution. And that's probably yours, Ben, because...
So, Representative McCabe, I think what... the conversation is more directed, or the question is more directed towards HDR 7 than it is HB 110 that's before us. But the purpose of HDR 7 was to say that the statute that is adopted to define what the permanent fund dividend payment will be is the way that you pay that money, make that payment. The fund that it's coming from, which would be the earnings reserve account, if I'm remembering correctly from HDR 7, would only be able to be transferred out of by statute and not by appropriation, because we moved the earnings reserve account out of the general fund and to the corporation, thereby taking away the ability to appropriate from that fund. It's now only able to be money removed from that account by statute that isn't an appropriation. Does that answer your question?
Fair enough. Thanks.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Do you maintain your objection on the CS?
Nope.
Since you objected.
And I moved it.
And you moved it.
I object.
Okay. Representative Gray?
Can I just speak to it really quick?
You may.
So my understanding, I understand where Representative McCabe is saying that we need a statute that gives us a formula for the dividend. I understand that. But I feel like from my line of questioning with Ms. Nauman, that what we need to protect money to be dedicated to the dividend is a constitutional amendment. And we don't this expensive, difficult, risky move to have the permanent fund corporation take over the paying of dividends actually doesn't achieve the goal of protecting that money in any way. So I object because I feel that what we need is, if we want to do 50-50, we should just do a 50-50. That would be a different bill. I feel like the parts of this bill that are focused on that move to the permanent fund corporation, even in the CS, even though it's a smaller thing, I just feel like it's unnecessary. That's
brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. Representative Gray.
I withdraw my objection.
Okay, thank you. Representative McCabe.
So thanks, Chair Carpenter. And just a little bit of a to let people know what's going on. This is why, you know, when the Fiscal Policy Working Group said everything needs to move together, we're not going to cherry pick and take, and cherry pick was the words we used. We're not going to cherry pick and do this one and do this one. I don't think we knew how difficult it was going to be to get all of these bills to march together. And this demonstrates why we have to stop saying we're working on the PFD, we're working on the spending cap, we're working on sales tax. We're working on a fiscal policy. We're working on a complete fiscal policy. And they have to move together. How we manage that is going to be difficult. It's going to take some conversation. I think it's going to take some conversation with the governor just as a stopgap. If something manages to make it through and something else doesn't manage to make it through, oh boy, now what? So there's going to have to be some discussions, some very hard discussions had. And so it's definitely a thorny problem. And you have highlighted exactly that. What happens if this happens and that doesn't happen? And it's a three-legged stool. And I think if we start thinking of it all, we can't put them all together in an omnibus bill because our Constitution won't let us. So we're going to have to start calling it the fiscal policy changes. And all we're doing is working on little pieces of it, and it all has to work together. I think that more than anything is key right now. So I'm addressing you because you brought up some really valid points, and they're concerning to all of us, I think. And we need to, find a path forward if we're going to do this. So anyways.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And there's no intention here on my part to rush us through an agreement on a committee substitute for the bill without fully understanding and vetting what we're doing here. So this is what we're supposed to be doing, is asking questions. Representative Allard, do you have a question?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. You removed your objection. If there are no other objections, then committee substitute for House Bill 110 is adopted by the committee, is now before us as amended or as substituted. Okay. Does any member have anything else to bring up for the committee? Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to associate myself with the comments for the member from Big Lake. I do think as someone who, as I've, you know, outed or confessed before, followed the workings and work of the Fiscal Policy Working Group in detail, avidly, and essentially ran on the report. I think that we do need to have the pieces to move together. Obviously, there's one piece that's been left behind in HDR 9 in terms of the. I just wanted to clarify a little bit. I very much think that we have to end the argument of the dividend, and I've said by putting in a constitutional provision, and I very much believe that. I also think we need to deal with another risk, which is the risk of the overdraws on the permanent fund by the legislature, and that's why I did raise last night those concerns about the leaving of HDR 9 behind, which was another one of the essential recommendations made by the Fiscal Policy Working Group. I commend the committee for this work. I just hope that we can get with the aid of the powerful legislators I see in front of me, revenue bills and other measures on the floor of the House so we can vote on them.
Thank you, Representative Groh. You're powerful. Oh, we're powerful tonight. Thank you. Let the record reflect.
Sure, I was taking that as a plea of guilty for me. Pleading
guilty right. Has to be involved. Thank you. Please let the record reflect that as we're getting ready to adjourn tonight, Representative Sadler has joined us at 7:30. Thank you, sir. Seeing no further business for the committee, we are adjourned as of 7:31.